Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Oh, dear Blood River Radio family, I'd like to thank you for hanging on. I think we had a really great, two great dynamite hours. I don't think I scheduled it right. I might have overscheduled a little bit the second hour, but you just never know what's going to happen in live radio. And sometimes with me, sometimes I'm down in the emergency room. We have people like Jason Robb and Mark Tommy, people like that, to come in to fill in. It just happens, especially when you start getting health problems. But anyway, We've got a guy on I've been waiting for a long time. You heard me. I started not to mention it in the first hour on the outline. I was going to wait for a surprise, but I'm a kid. I never can wait until my birthday. I have to try to sneak and see what people are going to get me. So we have the one and only my spirit son, James Edwards, coming on the third hour. Really excited about that. He's coming in. He's filling in for the one and only Bitter Ender, Gene Andrews. Gene, who's on the road. I think he's going to be on TPC tonight for Confederate History Hour. But anyway, James, there's 10 billion things I could say. I'm really excited and emotional, but I'm so glad you're coming on tonight. It's been way too long, brother.
Well, when we had that talk last week, I was out there in the depths of the sewer wrangling with plumbers in the city of Oakland, and you just happened to call me, and we shared some lamentations, and it just felt like old times, like it did almost a quarter of a century ago when it was a quarter of a century ago when we first met, not quite that long, but very nearly that long on the radio, and so many memories, so much history, and then, you know, so much advancement and growth from your TPC. You started Blood River Radio. You've been here for years now in your own right. Scoops coming up, of course, right after our show at the 9 o'clock Eastern, 9 o'clock Central, 10 o'clock Eastern hour. And I've got the counselor. He got to the studio early tonight. Keith Alexander is here an hour early for TPC. And yeah, I mean, you're just mentioning some of the names. Gene Andrews was actually on last week. Of course, he's on your last hour almost every week. He's very busy this time of year. But Mark Tommy, you just mentioned him. Mark's going to be on tonight as we're doing our Confederate History Month coverage, as you know also all too well during the month of April. But yeah, Eddie, when we were talking a few days ago, it doesn't take much for us to start going down memory lane and all the things and all the battles and all the memories, ups and downs, good, bad, a lot of good, a lot of laughs, and a lot of struggle. But it is that struggle that, you know, brings us all together. If it wasn't for the struggle, what else would we have?
You know, that's so true. And I remember we had little Izzy's birthday celebration just several weeks ago, and that kind of started me going down memory lane. I'm talking about, and even before your first child was born, even before you were married, even before TPC, we were together. I remember we were in the streets doing political battles. But even before that, you were running for political office. You were only like about 19 or 20 years old, and you were working for Pat Buchanan. I'm going way back in memory now, son. And I do call him son somewhat because he's like a spirit son to me. He really is. And I'll get to that point. And I'm not going to hog this thing because I want James to do most of the talking. But we met. James had this political campaign going. His dad had a shopping center at the time. It had a sandwich place in it, several little businesses. And James had his headquarters, his political headquarters. I can walk to this headquarters where the headquarters was. Within about, it took me about 6 minutes, six, 7 minutes, 7 minutes tops. And I put, if I remember right, I put a hand scribbled note. I tell you what, James, you go ahead and take the rest of the story, right? Because I want you to tell it because you do it a lot better job than I did. But this is way before TPC, way before marriage, way before children. A long time ago. That's how we met. But
this is it. And we've told this story before, but I always love telling it because it just goes to show how the hand of God can work and how something doesn't go according to plan, but it evolves into something far much more miraculous, even, you know, being on the radio for all of these years and everything we've done in media, you know, certainly has probably been worth more to the cause than me having won a seat in the Tennessee State Legislature in 2002. But that's what that's the year you're talking about. And yeah, Dad had a little strip mall. We had one of the bays as my campaign headquarters. It was a professionally run campaign on a shoestring, of course. We've never had any money, but we did run to win. I mean, we didn't run to put our name on the ballot and, you know, in some sort of a vanity effort. We were out there knocking on doors every day, and it was in between the Buchanan campaign of 2000 and TPC getting started in 2004. It was right in the middle of that, 2002, and that was my effort to keep a lot of those people I met with Pat together, to keep them together. I didn't want to lose touch with all of these people that I'd spent a year with and had grown quite attached to, and I wanted to continue to fight and continue to try to advance the cause. And so I said, well, what if I run? And so we ran, and a lot of the people that were, you know, the regional operatives for Buchanan helped me in that campaign. And it was one night in the summer of 2002, I was canvassing Eddie's neighborhood. I never had met Eddie before, had never heard of Eddie before, and he had never heard of me, but I missed him at the door, and I had left one of my campaign brochures at his door and a little note, sorry I missed you, and had my campaign headquarters address, which, as he mentioned, just happened to be basically across the street from the neighborhood he lived in, as Providence would have it. And Eddie, I was still out knocking on doors when he must have come to the campaign headquarters, but he left a little handwritten note in pencil, and he put it in between it was a double door, glass doors, double doors, and he just kind of left it there in the crack in between the two doors. It was locked, and I got the note, and we got in touch, and that, as they say, is that. And that was the summer of 2002. And Eddie, I don't think any of us would have thought on that hot summer night in 2002 that now 24 years later we'd be 22 and 7 years respectively with our own talk radio programs, that all was a result of that fateful meeting.
I'll never ever dreamed I would even be on a radio program. I never thought I'd have my own. I remember it went something like this. We had become acquainted before we got to be really good friends, and you said something about, well, I gotta go out to the studio, I gotta do this radio show. Jess Bonds had called in, or maybe Austin Farley, one of the guys, maybe they couldn't make it or something, or my all time favorite, Winston Smith. As a matter of fact, I know this is another rabbit trail. I got to like Winston Smith before I got to be really acquainted with you. I was coming home from deer hunting from Natchez Trace State Park. It's about 100 miles east of our house, and I was listening to this great radio broadcast, Political Sales Pool, and it had Winston Smith on there. I got in touch with him, man. But that's it. You asked me one day, would you like to come on and sit in the radio show? I said, well, yeah, that sounds like fun. I did it, and it's, the rest was history. And I think we started off, you were doing an hour a week in what we call the bean field. And I was telling Brendan about it to this very day. And people, it really was a bean field on the edge of the Wolf River Bottoms, north of where we're sitting, north of the Memphis city limits. And I'm going to go back to James after this brief interview. You've heard us talk about before about snakes and wasps and spiders being in that old decrepit. It was an old radio station, probably, I don't know, James, what, 30s, 40s, when they first started that radio station out there. But we were going in, and literally a snake got in the computer once, and they had to shut the whole computer thing down.
James, it got fried. It got fried. Yep. I mean, it blew itself up. I still can remember that smell. And this folks, this was a real, you know, actual, factual working radio station with the transmitter, the radio tower, and it was nice. I mean, you know, Eddie's making, I mean, these things did happen. It was sort of out there in a rural area on the outskirts of Memphis, but I mean, it had offices, it had, you know, of course, the broadcast studio. I mean, we're at a different station now, AM 1600. That was when we were on 1380 back in the very early days, but yeah, it was kind of like you know, Huckleberry Finn, Tom Sawyer, stuff like that. But then we would get on the radio and be broadcasting all over Memphis and around the world through the internet. And those were the very early days. And in those early days, Eddie, It was actually 2 hours. It was 7 to 9, Monday through Friday. And so we did have this in those days when we were very first starting. My dad was basically, you know, paying for all the airtime. I mean, I was 24, you know, barely hanging on. And this was before, of course, you know, we caught on and carved a market for ourselves. But there was a lot of rotating chairs in those days, because we were on 5 nights a week, and it was all volunteerism, and you know, it was difficult for people to do that. And so Winston would fill in for me a lot if I couldn't be out there. And then I think you and him started working together, and we had a lot of different people: Jess Bonds, Austin Farley, Jeff Melton. There was quite a few. And then, you know, we really started to hit our stride with Keith Alexander, Bill Rowland, and me and you and Winston. I mean, that was the one that really sort of set TPC as to what it would later become. And then when, after Winston moved and Bill died, it was me, you, and Keith for so many years. And that was really when we came into our own.
Well, I guess you know we got to go that first break. And I hate to break, but we'll be right back, folks.
Introducing Managed IT Services from NPI. We offer top-notch data backup and recovery, email spam protection, and network security tailored to your needs and budget. With 20-plus years of experience in the medical field, our HIPAA-certified consultants know what it takes to protect sensitive information. Don't settle for less. Give us a call at 801-706-6980 and experience the difference with Managed IT Services. Remember, your IT support should be fast, efficient, and reliable.
I'm Monica Schaefer from Canada, a former political prisoner. Here at Blood River Radio, we are not afraid to tell the truth and shame the devil. Our mission is to fight against white genocide. We do that by exposing the lies. We talk about the American Civil War. We talk about the vilification of German people and, by extension, all white people. And we even talk about that linchpin lie, the Holocaust. Deception by the alien enemy within has brought us whites to our knees. My last words at the Schaefer's speech crime trial in Germany were, quote, "If there was a law forbidding us to breathe, we would break that law immediately just to live. And so it is with this law. We must break this law in order to survive and thrive as a people," unquote. Please donate to Blood River Radio and help keep us on the air.
Introducing PrepStartsNow.com, your ultimate guide to readiness and peace of mind. We offer practical preparedness tools, training, and education to take your family's household readiness to the next level. Browse the prep shop for essential products, check out our planning guides, and stay informed with our prep blog. Visit PrepStartsNow.com and subscribe to our emails for exclusive offers, new products, and future events. Remember, preparedness begins with PrepStartsNow.com.
Let me tell you something, boy, if I did give you power, you got nothing. Nobody gives you power. Real power is something you take.
Actually, I thought that was actually, first of all, I want to thank Eddie for letting me bring Blood River Radio back from break. I actually thought that was Eddie. That's the way he talks to me off the air. So I thought that was actually just a recording of us getting into it one night.
I kind of spruced my voice up a little bit, try to sound a little more, a little more edumacated that way. But yeah, we have, but you know what? Do you know, even my best friend in the world, I guess you'd say since 1963, even before that, I won't mention his name on the air because he would stroke out if I did. He's not quite as fiery as yours truly. He doesn't like confrontation. But anyway, I've known him since 1963, and we literally, when we were teenagers, we haven't done it since we were in our early 20s, fist fought, blood, me and the guy I'm talking about, I grew up with in the mean old good streets of South Memphis, but we're still the best of friends. That's just the way real men do. But, and I'll just go back and say this again. I was there the day, Izzy was born. And even before that, I was there before there was an Izzy, before there was a TPC, before James got married, before any of that. We've been together that long. James just said, come up with, he just said, we only have so many quarter centuries in a lifetime. Been together a quarter of a century. This broadcast tonight really means a lot to me because I people need to know. There's not many of us out there, James, to do this. And well, we do. Go ahead, son.
I was just going to say, yes. I mean, you only get so many quarter of a century intervals in a lifetime, and we've spent one of those together. And as I said, along with Keith, I mean, losing Bill was such a blow. Bill Rowland was just such a pillar in what we were beginning to build there, and he got taken far too soon back in, you know, just, 2012, 2011. And, but... Yes, you look back and it's impossible in an hour to recap all of those memories and all of those stories and all of that history. But one thing I will say is, say what you will, but there is no arguing this. A lot of it comes down to matters of opinion and preference. But one thing that is a fact is that nobody was doing this before us. There was not another regularly scheduled pro-white broadcast on any platform in any way, shape, or form prior to TPC. And we were lucky enough to be able to do it on AM radio, of course, because that was the only place you could do it back then. I mean, we had the internet and a stream and archives because the internet allowed that. But there was no podcasting as there exists today. There was no YouTube. There was no Twitter. And I think no. Facebook had just come online. And so nobody did this before us. And now, I mean, it's impossible to even know all of the different players now. I mean, there are hundreds, if not thousands, worldwide who are doing their own podcast and their own shows that they post. And but, you know, it all started right here with me and you and Keith and some of the other people you mentioned that are no longer with us for different reasons. But that is where it started. And then you go back all those histories, all those memories, all those battles, all those guests. And, you know, it's one thing I really do delight in all the people that we've met with out of all these different conferences and events and demonstrations and vigils, as we called it, when we were trying to protect the Confederate parks. When Al Sharpton came to town, and I mean, just all the news that has been made. And I get such a kick, listening to Blood River and looking at the archives each week and seeing so many familiar names, from the days we were all doing it together under the TPC umbrella. Paul Fromm, Gene Andrews, Mark Tommy, who's going to be on with us tonight, just all the people you have on so regularly. And that, you know, we all did this together, and now it's branched out. But, yeah, I don't even know where you want to start with a few stories to tell. But, you know, I will say this. One thing I was thinking about today was, and we've told this story before, of course, but you were just mentioning it during the break, that 500-strong demonstration we had at Nathan Bedford Forrest graveside in Memphis when they were trying to, and eventually did, in the case of the monument in Memphis, you know, remove all of the Confederate monuments from the public square after the Dylan Roof shooting in Charleston, South Carolina. And we had 500 people that showed up in Memphis. There was only one. There were dozens and dozens across the South in 2015. People might not remember that. There were a lot of backlash, pro-Southern backlash.
Yes.
You would have thought that there wouldn't have been, because now we're post-Charlottesville and all of that seems fantastical. It seems like it would not have happened. But in 2015, it did. That was prior to Charlottesville, before a lot of this got cooled. And there were dozens of demonstrations that had anywhere from dozens to hundreds of people. We were the second biggest. There was one bigger than ours, and the SPLC wrote about it, and it happened in Ocala, Florida. But I remember just being so full of just energy and fight that you and I, Eddie, went out each holding the top side of a Confederate flag, and
yes,
you were on one end and I was on the other, and we stood on Union Avenue in downtown Memphis, and we just stood there on the corner holding the Confederate flag in front of Forrest's grave. I don't know if that was the smartest thing we ever did.
It was the smartest thing. We were the only two people there.
I mean, this was prior to the 500 people. It was just us there that day, and we were down there to scout and get things set up a few days prior to that. And then the day of, I mean, there was 500 people there. There is a picture. It really is one of the coolest pictures I've ever seen. And it's a picture of you holding a Confederate flag, and you're standing, you're facing the Confederate, you're facing Nathan Bedford Forrest's equestrian monument, which sat atop his grave. And an AP reporter, a reporter for the Associated Press, took your picture from behind. So it's the camera's facing your back, you're facing the monument's in the background, and you're holding this flag, and the wind's got it just perfect. And that picture was in over 1,000 newspapers around the world.
You know, and I'd like to tell people that was a 6-foot by 4-foot flag that flew at your wedding, young man. And that's where I got that flag. It was a big flag. You had it the night you and Danny got married. I'll never forget that. It was a wet night. It had been raining. Y'all had to put this kind of an aside. I'm notorious for going off in these rabbit trails, but y'all had to make kind of like a little walkways and things so Danny wouldn't get her wedding dress muddy and everything. But that flag was posted flying on a pole the night you got married at your home. You were married in your home.
Yep.
God, I can't believe it's been that long ago. This is way younger before. It surely was. But that flag, yeah. And I remember I was going up and down a sidewalk with that flag, up and down. And people, when James talked about Union Avenue, you've heard me talk about Memphis being Memphrica. You're talking about in the heart of Black Memphrica. That's where we did this. We went there on our own before, like James said, before we went to scout the place out to kind of war game, getting the announcement, trying to get people to come from all over the country. They did come from all over the country. I was really, I could not believe that many people came. But we filled that park up. But yes, we were there with that Confederate battle flag on the streets,
you know,
in downtown Memphrica, and we could have got our butt shot off. And
that's what I was going to say. I mean, there is an old saying, of course, everybody's heard it, cliche, I guess, discretion sometimes is the better part of valor. And
yes.
I mean, you know, it would not be hard to imagine in America's most violent and murderous city, some black rolling down his window and spraying us for that.
And this is the most dangerous city. If you look any given time, sometimes I wonder if it's really that bad. But if you type in right now and then you see YouTube, YouTube is about it all the time. Memphis, they said Memphis, I call it Memphrica, is the most dangerous city in the United States, and it really is dangerous. We did that. And
well, that was one memory. And then, of course, as you mentioned, you know, Keith was a big part of this too.
Yes.
The David Duke conference here in 2008. Now that one had 500 people registered as well. And they were coming in from all over the world. And of course, you know, because you were there, it got canceled. And see, again, it's hard for people to go back to that time and say, well, of course it got canceled. Well, you know, no, of course not. I mean, yes, it was only years after that everything began to get canceled just out of hand. American Renaissance, Council of Conservative Citizens conferences were still held even after 2008 publicly. It wasn't until a few years later that they all had to either be, you know, shut down or, you know, in case of American Renaissance, they moved to the state park to get around that. But even as late as 2008, people like David Duke still had the right to rent a hotel room and do this. So it was really astonishing that it got shut down, and the way it got shut down with the entire county declaring a state of emergency because we were having a meeting, and they declared a state of emergency for the whole county. They were sending helicopters out to try to see where we were. And, of course, the hotel canceled it. And you were with David on the sidewalk for a press conference. He got kicked out of 3 hotels that he was just using for his own private accommodation. No meeting was going to be held there. He just needed a place to sleep. He had driven up from from New Orleans. And anyway, and we still were able to pull that one off under great duress and with a lot of misdirection. We were telling the press we were meeting in Olive Branch, Mississippi, when we had another place in Shelby County, Tennessee. And that was really, to come under that much harassment and to be under that much pressure and to have to use misdirection and to outfox the media and to be able to have this. And that's when we learned that, you know, if you're going to have events, you're going to have to use these deceptive things and go under assumed names. And that's how we've done all the TPC conferences since then. You know, so we learned that lesson. But you live and you learn. And that was still one of my proudest moments, just because, you know, we had people, I think out of the 500, 300 people still came knowing that the event had been canceled and knowing that we were trying to get a place, but there was no guarantees. And we still had about 300 people. And that was a great day. And of course, we were all there together.
We got to go to a quick break, but I just like to say that some people have gone 50, 7,500 miles away and heard we were going to redo the get-together, and so they turned around and came back. So people, we're going to go to a quick break. You got about 4 minutes. Use the bathroom, coffee, whatever. You got plenty of time. Be right back in 4 minutes, though.
How would you like to help this program reach more people and earn silver at the same time? Call or text 801-669-2211 for complete details.
News this hour from Town Hall. I'm Mary Rose. A series of reported tornadoes has torn through the Midwestern U.S., ripping roofs off homes and leaving roads impassable. A National Weather Service meteorologist, Mark Chouinard, says more bad weather is in the forecast.
So there is a threat of some severe weather today. Greatest chances farther east, so portions of, say, West Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, most at risk today. But it's not expected to be as widespread or as significant as what we saw.
Officials in Illinois, Wisconsin, and Minnesota have expressed relief that the storms did not result in loss of life. In Wisconsin, homes were damaged and residents were trapped in basements. Minnesota saw at least 30 homes damaged. The standoff over the Strait of Hormuz has quickly escalated again as Iran reversed its reopening of the crucial waterway and fired on ships attempting to pass in retaliation after the U.S. pressed ahead with its blockade, choking off Iranian ports. Pressure on Iran's finances continues to squeeze Tehran. Correspondent John Scott has the details.
Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent is touting a new U.S. economic offensive against Iran, exploiting Gulf nations' new willingness to expose and freeze Iranian regime bank assets after recent attacks. Measures part of Operation Economic Fury include expanded sanctions targeting Iranian oil reserves, IRGC leadership, and terror proxy funding networks.
Oil prices dropped back to where they were in the early days of the Iran war, and U.S. stocks raced to another record. The S&P 500 leaped 1.2% Friday after Iran said the Strait of Hormuz was open again for commercial tankers carrying crude. The Dow Jones Industrial Average leaped as many as 1,100 points. More on these stories, townhall.com.
In today's fast-paced world, professionals face endless projects, deadlines, competition. To thrive, you need mental clarity, sharp focus, and reliable memory. That's why the same company that brings you Relief Factor created ThinkFactor. ThinkFactor is designed to help you think clearer and perform better daily. It's a powerful blend of nutrients that supercharges your memory and sharpens your focus. You can stay on top of your work and outshine the competition. After a couple of weeks of taking ThinkFactor, I noticed a dramatic difference in my clarity, my focus, even my memory. And you know what? The longer you take ThinkFactor, the better the results are. If you've ever felt mentally foggy or struggled to keep up with everything on your plate, well, ThinkFactor can help you reclaim your cognitive edge and thrive in your life. Call 800-4-RELIEF, 800-4-RELIEF, or visit ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com, to order ThinkFactor. Call 800-4-RELIEF or visit ReliefFactor.com. Your first bottle, just $19.95. ThinkFactor. Think clearer, perform better daily.
I'm Michael Hill, president of the League of the South. I and my compatriots are Southern nationalists. We seek the survival, well-being, and independence of the Southern people, our people. The League wants a South that enjoys the sweet fruits of Christian liberty and prosperity, but our current situation won't allow it. We must have our independence from Washington, D.C. and the globalists. The present system cannot be reformed. Without independence, we will continue down this path of destruction. To us, this is not acceptable. I'm asking you, Southern man and woman, to join us today to free the South. Call us at 256-757-6789 or see our website at www.leagueofthesouth.com. God save the South.
Former Sheriff Richard Mack recounts in his book, The Proper Role of Law Enforcement, how he came to realize while working as a beat cop how wrong the all-too-common orientation of police officers is when they think of their job as being to write tickets and arrest people. Richard Mack tells of his personal transformation from by-the-number cop to constitution-conscious defender of citizen safety and freedoms. Learn what it really means to serve and protect. Purchase your copy at CSPOA.org. That's CSPOA.org.
Are you watching what's happening in our country and asking, what can I do? Join the John Birch Society in Salt Lake City, June 6th, for a powerful one-day conference. The day includes a host of respected speakers, two meals, and meaningful connections. You'll gain clarity on the issues and walk away with practical steps you can take to your community. Reserve your seat today at jbs.org/SLC26. That's jbs.org/SLC26.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning. It smells like victory.
Dear Blood River Radio family, you know, we caught lightning in a bottle. And that's a quote I heard James say years ago. We have, just in case you're just now tuning in, we have James Edwards, my spirit son, a fellow who I've been knowing for a quarter of a century. We've become fast friends, so it's more like a spiritual relationship. Really, really, I've said this, spirit trumps blood, and we have been like spirit father and son, spirit warriors. We have fought, in the show notes I did today, we fought more battles than we can remember. And some of them got violent. They, you know, we put our life on the line. We really have. I'm not being, you know, I'm not being a dramatic, like a drama queen. We've been in some tight places. And if it's even worse nowadays. People will get shot just for flying a flag. You can get shot for just on the interstate here in Memphis just for looking at the in the wrong direction. In fact, they called some of the, one of the lanes on I-240 goes through Memphis, they called it the gun lane. But the way we call it, lightning in a bottle, that's true. It was, I saw a fellow, it looked like, you know, the AI, they had like West Lane, Little Rock, Arkansas, South Jackson, Mississippi, this lane here, the gun lane. But we, you know, we caught, and I can get to some of the changes that we've seen, that me and James have seen, but we caught, James, you said we caught lightning in a bottle. Once you started cesspool, back in 2004, when the cesspool just went, well, actually before that, before the cesspool getting started, you said we were the only game in town. And it was just amazing what we did.
Well, think about it, too. I mean, you know, catching lightning in a bottle is also as a result of just opportunity and good timing intersecting. Because if the opportunity had come for me to go into radio any time prior to 2004, I would have been too young and unseasoned. I mean, people could have argued I was even in 04. But of course, you know, I wouldn't have had the opportunity to go into radio anyway, because if it had been for the Buchanan campaign and my own campaign for the State House, I mean, we wouldn't have caught the ears of the station manager. But I mean, I would have been too young. And if it had happened a few years later, you know, I would have been married by then, maybe had kids, maybe had a job that wouldn't have allowed me to do this. And it could have been too late. I mean, we got in there in that Goldilocks zone of 04 and again got out a decade ahead of, you know, the next people who would start to talk about our issues in broadcast media. And then, so that's how all of that was. And that was catching it in the bottle in terms of the timing of it all, and a lot of great interviews over those years. And if it had happened earlier or later, it just wouldn't have clicked. And now I don't even know. I mean, for somebody coming in now and wanting to do a show like this, how would you ever break through the logjam? I mean, as I said, there's hundreds of shows now like this. There was only one in 2004. Now there's hundreds, and some of them are fast burns. Well, they James, last a few days or weeks, and then some of them, you know, are quite good. But I'm just saying, now we got out ahead of all that and sort of cornered the market, and we're able to build a following that has been very loyal. Now I don't know how you would ever break through. Keith wants to say something.
Yeah, sure. Eddie.
Hey, counselor.
You guys are Hey, how are you doing, buddy? It's always
pretty
good to hear
your voice. Pretty good for no geezer. It's pretty good.
Well, let me just tell you this. I think you and James are being too modest. Basically, what you did, you didn't call it a podcast, but what we all had here was the first podcast from the far right. And every other podcast that has followed owes the political cesspool, Eddie Miller, James, me, Bill Rowland, Winston Smith, a tip of the hat, because we started. We were basically the first podcast.
Well, I mean, podcast, yes.
We never called it a podcast, but what it was what we're doing, which is broadcasting forbidden information and forbidden analysis on issues that the left thought they put to bed long ago.
Well, I mean, the thing about podcasts, though, I never have used that term because I think it cheapens actually what we do. I mean, a podcast is basically just, an audio broadcast that's recorded at a regular interval and posted somewhere where people can download it or listen to it. We have
But we proved it can be done, though.
We have always been an AM talk radio show that has broadcast archives. So I guess, you know, it's a gray area. You're muddying the waters. It's really sort of one and the same. But we're a little bit more than the average podcast. But I will say this, Eddie. One thing I wanted to get back to as well is, you know, some of those interviews that you featured in on TPC. When we would have certain guests, you never know who would be in the second chair that night, right? But there was a lot of nights where you came in and we had some of our biggest, most memorable interviews. Now, Bill Rowland was in, for instance, for Chief Drew Lackey, who had arrested Rosa Parks. We talk about that one all the time. Bill Rowland was in for our interviews with Lieutenant Godfrey Dulias of the Luftwaffe, great historical interviews. But you were in for some pretty amazing interviews yourself. The very first time we had a sitting member of Congress on, Walter Jones, I think you had set that up somehow. You had set up some big-time interviews for us. Walter Jones, I mean, we won't even remember the Paul Bébute thing, but that made national news. You were in there for that. And I'll tell you one that I still think about. And that is the interview with Gary Sinise, you know, this A-list Hollywood celebrity.
Reading my mind.
When we were done with Gary Sinise, now he played Lieutenant Dan in Forrest Gump, and he did dedicated a great deal of his fortune to helping Vietnam veterans. And of course, so y'all had that connection. I remember when we got done with that interview, Gary Sinise was like, you know, is Eddie still there? I'm going to talk to Eddie some more.
Well, he knew I was an old Vietnam vet. And you know what? That's what I had. I've always wondered how in the hell they got my phone number, because I'm still a tech tard. I know nothing about tech stuff. Thank God for Miss Lizzie. But, you know, and Jay and Sam. But anyway, I had this real cheap, what do they call it, little early phones they had, throwaway phones. And it rung. And some guy says, "How are you, Eddie?" Eddie Miller said, "Yeah." You know, he says, "Well, I'm calling for Gary Sinise. I'm his publication agent." And I thought, "Yeah, sure you are." And he said he wanted to come on Political Central Radio and talk about this. All this. I said, "Yeah, sure, yeah." I started telling him to kiss my ass because I was getting ready to go to get a beer. But I said, "But it sure enough was." How he got the phone number, I'll never know. And I think James didn't even think I was serious at first. We actually got that done. And you mentioned Congressman Walter Jones. I thought, well, I'm going to call this congressman. He's talking like one of us. There's no way in hell he's ever going to come on TPC. But you know what? If you don't strike the ball, if you don't swing at the ball, you're guaranteed to strike out. I call him. I'll be a son of a bitch if he didn't come on. And yeah.
Well, I tell you another thing about Walter Jones. I mean, he got raked over the coals for coming on. And he never backed down from it. And as a matter of fact, when Sam Bushman happened to be in D.C. and he was just kind of going door to door calling on congressmen. And of course, you know, most of them were too busy for an unannounced visitor. And Walter Jones' secretary said the same thing. And Walter Jones and Sam Bushman said, you know, I syndicate the political cesspool. And the congressman came out and moved Sam right into his office. They sat and talked. Yep.
You know, another big deal that we did, and I don't know who was responsible for it, but when we got the Bureau of Vital Statistics in Hawaii to confirm.
Was that
you, Eddie, or who was it?
Well, I'll tell you how that happened. Eddie, do you remember this? What happened was, this was when that whole thing was going on with the that's a great one, Keith. Yeah. Eddie, do you remember this? This was when the whole controversy as to whether or not Barack Obama was a
birth certificate.
The birth certificate. And we were broadcasting live at a Council of Conservative Citizens conference right around the time Obama got elected. Mm-hmm. And of all people, and this turned out to be verifiably true, that he was who he said he was, in terms of this guest I'm about to mention. He was in the crowd at that meeting, and he happened to be the chief elections clerk of the state of Hawaii. And he said, I looked into it personally, and there was no birth certificate for Barack Obama in the state of Hawaii. And he came on, and there was people. I mean, he did major interviews after that. Drum Corsi, in his book, Where's the Birth Certificate, he got in touch with him through us. His name was God, I forgot his name.
My memory sucks.
That's on the tip of my tongue. But yeah, I mean, from that interview, and he just happened to be at one of our conferences, and he came on the show. And it was like you said, with some of these other things, I was like, you know, I'll need to check into this guy's background. But he was who he said he was. Now, it couldn't be verified as to whether or not what he was saying was true, because the rest of the state of Hawaii, you know, clammed up. But he was saying, I looked into it when I was there. He was the former chief elections clerk. He said there was nothing for Obama in Hawaii. So who knows?
Wasn't qualified to be president then, basically.
Well, that can be said for a lot of them. But I think technically, yes, he wouldn't have been. What was his name? I'll have to look it up.
It's like, you know, Keith, it's like divine intervention. Some of the things that happened when we were tiny, I've told people, some of our listeners have said, yeah, we can say almost anything in those days because we had 52 people listening to us. That's before we got going really strong. We got going strong. And then people like Wendy Thomas came along, and we started getting, we'll talk about Wendy Thomas in a minute, maybe. People, we got to go to
Eddie, it was never more fun than it was in those early
Windy
years.
Windy.
It was so much fun, man. Folks, I hate to go to this break. Maybe we can skip it some kind of way, but I guess we can't. Wait, folks, we got to take our last break. Be right back, folks. You got 2 minutes.
In the medical field, IT security is crucial. Our highly skilled consultants are HIPAA certified and have 20 plus years of experience servicing medical clinics, billing and supply companies. We offer comprehensive endpoint protection, guarding your computers and servers against all stages of threats. And with our 24/7 monitoring services, you'll never worry about extensive downtime again. Ready to level up your IT support? Call 801-706-6980 today and discover how great IT services can be with Managed IT Services.
Hey, this is Matt from Blood River Radio. Blood River Radio is your voice to save our land, our people, and our future. We propose Christian solutions to an anti-Christian assault on our bloodlines. We love what we do, but we cannot do it without your help. The annual operating cost of Blood River Radio is more than even a team of people should bear alone. With your donation, we can take the fight to our enemies and hold our own people accountable for their treachery against us. Please go to our website, www.bloodriverradio.com, and find a way to help us that is suitable for you. We are thankful for any cash, check, or money orders we get. We also appreciate your correspondence or letters of encouragement. Once again, please help, and thank you for joining the fight.
Bypass the mainstream narrative with Liberty News Radio at libertynewsradio.com. Engage with charismatic hosts live or on demand. We cover the crucial news focused on God, family, and country. News that other networks simply refuse to use. Think of LNR as hard-hitting news and podcasts at your fingertips anytime, anywhere. Join us at libertynewsradio.com. Empower your day with the truth, because the truth will set you free. libertynewsradio.com.
Just having some laughs. I mean, again, you can't do nearly a quarter century of memories in four segments, but we're getting some licks in. So we were talking about a couple of things in the break. I'll just mention them very quickly. Number one, by the way, listening to that music, you've got a lot of Vietnam era music as your bumpers. You know, another one that we interviewed was Lieutenant General Hal Moore.
Yes, one of my favorite. Yeah,
and he came on the show. Mel Gibson. Yes. Played him in the movie We Were Soldiers. Yep. Yep. But anyway, we were talking about when they really tried to kill us in the spring of 2006. So we'd been on the air since the fall of 2004. So it'd been about a year and a half. And the SPLC did their whole thing where back then, back in the mid 2000s, if the SPLC targeted you, now everybody sort of wants their.
They were a force to be reckoned with in 2006, yes. And now they're a joke.
Well, now, I mean, you know, if you haven't been marked by them, you know, nobody really takes you seriously. People, like, solicit their attacks so they can, like, stay in the club. But back then, it was pretty much a silver bullet that could take out most people. Either they would fall on their swords, or the people who were propping them up, in this case our radio station and our station manager, would you know, fire them. And the SPLC, it was every major news outlet, ABC, CBS, Fox, all the affiliates, TV, newspaper, they were all in array about this racist radio program on this local station. How is this happening in the city of Memphis where Dr. King was killed and all of that? And
the,
I remember
the Klan has risen from the crypt.
Doing this interview, this press conference, it was at that park, Eddie. I told him to just meet me at this at the Bartlett Park behind the fire station on Alteria. And I, it had a, it was a whole gaggle of press, and they, you know, they, of course they expected you to just, you know, apologize and say you're not a racist and you hate yourself and all of this. And I remember just telling them, I said, I've been waiting to get attacked by the SPLC. I feel like we finally arrived. This is a wonderful day for me. Thank y'all for coming out. And they don't like to be mocked. And so that's sort of, and then they tried to go after the radio station, of course. And they asked our station manager, they said, "Oh, what's going on? You know, why are you having this racist show?" He said, "What are you talking about, racist show? He has the freedom of speech. And we never get any complaints." And they said, "Well, do you have any black employees that work at your radio station?" He goes, "Yeah, all of them." which was true. We had a lot of black Herbert, one of the engineers, Catrisa, one of the program producers.
I remember there was a black preacher that had a show, and he had me on his show one time.
Well, there was a lot of
place was over there in Nutbush.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that was 1600. Yeah, but anyway, nevertheless, so we survived all of that. And what was another story? It was something else. So back then we were a little more active in the local community in the early years before we started focusing almost exclusively on national issues, because the program grew outside of the local area. We started getting more and more listeners outside of Memphis than in it, and so we focused on larger issues nationwide and even globally. But we attended a lot of local meetings back then, whether it be, you know, firearms groups or you know, John Birch Society, different
Tennessee
groups.
Firearms.
It was only a matter. It wasn't a Ron Paul, you know, the Ron Paul Campaign for Liberty. I mean, were really in that even more than I was, Eddie.
Yes.
And it wasn't a question of if Eddie was going to be ejected from a meeting. It was just a matter of when.
Well, we were taking bets, you know, about how many minutes into the thing it would
take. Well, I can remember two. I can remember two instances vividly.
Marsha Blackburn.
Number one was Senator Marsha Blackburn. She was Congresswoman Blackburn then.
Yes.
Now she's Senator Blackburn. And she came and she was speaking to a local group who were friends of ours. They were friends at the program. It was a firearms associated group. But anyway, you know, asked her something, and she didn't answer his question. Then he kind of, you know, he didn't walk up to her threateningly, but he walked up to her. And I just remember she was standing there like a mannequin. She was just looking at Eddie, not blinking, smiling with this plastered-on smile. This is Senator Marsha Blackburn, and Eddie's like just, you know, I'm not going to say haranguing her, but I mean, Eddie's trying to get her
like
to
a mongoose after a cobra.
Anyway, Eddie, they just said, "Eddie, you know, she obviously doesn't want to talk to you." So he's just, but I mean, you didn't ask an inappropriate question at all. It was something about trade and you know, it's something about America's trade policies. And anyway, that was interesting. But the one that really stands out of all the meetings we attended back in those early years of TPC, it was a Ron Paul organizing meeting, and it was all our people. It was all either the staff of the show or friends of the show or people who thought just like us, except for this one purple haired woman who came in with a black boyfriend. And one of the ideas we had was, you know, we could do a Ron Paul event at Nathan Bedford Forest Park, because we had done some events there, and it was a central location, lots of acreage in downtown Memphis. And she said, "Well, you know, my black boyfriend might not like if we did something there." And I can't remember what Eddie said, but there wasn't a word that wasn't foul.
And also, it wasn't a word that wasn't true.
Well, it wasn't. Yeah, he told the truth, but he Eddie was in the Army. He wasn't in the Navy, but he certainly could swear like a sailor. So.
Yes, I gave him
you
lessons.
What did you say to her? What did you say to her that night?
I tell you what, some of the things I said to Lindsay may have to bleep them out. I called her a purple haired, you know.
Yeah. I don't remember it now. It's all coming back to me now.
Yeah, I mean, a purple hair.
And then our own co-host at the time, Jeff Melton, had to cough you down. Anyway.
It was,
you,
were,
you, you, you've tamed with age. Back then, I mean, it was
like fine
wine. It was a tinderbox back then. I mean, the lightest thing. Eddie. That's why he got the name the Bombardier. Winston called you the Bombardier because you
opened the bays.
Because I mean, you were
reminded
always...
me of Slim Pickens in Dr. Strangelove.
Eddie was always ready to mix it up. That's why he got the nickname the Bombardier.
When Marsha Blackburn was there, I've gone through her website, read some of her stuff, and found out she was a rabid supporter of the United Nations. And
that's
I told
what
her
it was.
That's what as it was. Soon as she came out in the foyer where she could be seen, I nailed her ass. I said, "You know, it's the Tennessee Firearms Association was putting her on, was sponsoring her event, and I'll make this quick." And I said, "Hey, you know." You're supposed to be such a wonderful... Here, wait, I'll go right back. The reason she was there, there was a citizen shooting that happened in a Kroger store in Cordova, not from where, far from where my daughter and son-in-law lived. And it was a citizen with a registered a permit to have a sidearm, and he confederated a felon, and it became a shooting incident. And Marsha Blackburn was going to make hay out of that. She was going to pose as this big pro-gun, the Congress lady, congressman. And I told her, if you're such a damn pro-gun person, why are you such a fanatic supporter of the United Nations, which is the largest gun control organization in the world? Tennessee firearms people went crazy. Remember they came back there and started threatening to me and everything? And I said, you know, if we go out, y'all might win, but it's not going to be pretty. And then they called the radio station later on trying to get in. And you said, oh, hellfire, they're calling the radio station. I said, well, do they know how to get here? But that was before GPS, y'all. And we were going to give them a map. But, yeah, man, we had some wild times in those days. But Keith actually was wilder than I was. We used to reel old Keith in all the time, man. we had to have some good times. Remember, and another fellow we talked about, Larry Bates. Larry Bates was a relatively wealthy. He had a regular show on every day.
He and his son had some religious program.
They were more than relatively wealthy.
Yeah, they were big-time wealthy.
They were nationwide.
They tried to get us off the air every which way they could, and Dave Brown, to his credit, wouldn't get rid of us. But you know what? They were such big Christians, man, big Christians. Well, guess what? They're the ones that wound up in federal prison. Their whole damn family. Larry Bates, his wife, his son, their in-law, they were all in on the scam. They were selling silver and gold, precious metals. I started to buy some from them one time. Curiously, they didn't have any to sell. I thought, that's weird. But anyway, they got caught a Ponzi scheme with the silver thing. They wound up in federal penitentiary. They may be out now. But
they may be inside listening. If they are, hello, guys. How are you doing?
Who outlasted who? But Keith, some of your fine memories. Oh, I would like to say one thing about Bill Rowland. I was a new Christian then. That's when my faith was sky high. And one thing has always been, one of my dearest memories, me, Keith, and James, we were at Bill's bedside probably a day or two before he died, and I asked Bill would he like me to pray for him. He said he would. So I got to say maybe the last prayer, the last prayer ever said
day.
Would. And I'll never forget that, y'all. I'll never will.
I remember LaKeith, we went out there and did his will. You know, yes. He got a will done at the last minute. And
yes.
You're asking about things that I remember. I remember the with Bill doing an interview of Alanna Mercer and pointing out that she and her family were big supporters of the anti-apartheid movement.
Oh.
And they did not listen to the white Gentiles that said this would be a terrible idea. But when it happened and it did become a terrible idea, they took the first flight back to Tel Aviv, as Jews almost always do. You know,
yes.
that's
well, now
Israel is their escape valve. But now, in the meantime, I'll say this in Atlanta's behalf. She has seemed to have an awakening about the pernicious nature of Jewish power.
Maybe it's time to reconcile, because she always liked me, and I was out that night, and you and Bill were hosting the show that night, Keith. And
what'd she say? She had eyes the white Al Sharpton.
Yeah, the negative image of Al Sharpton.
You couldn't believe that somebody would actually call her out on that.
Well, I tell you what, a lot of people couldn't believe a lot of things we did, y'all, especially in the early days. We were Sometimes looking back, I can't believe we did it myself. Y'all, we've run completely out of time. This has been magic. I'm looking forward to hopefully next month, next May, we're supposed to all do this again, do a whole 3 hours on James' show.
3 hours just like this. You got it.
Yes. God bless you guys. I love you guys with all my heart. As far as I'm concerned, we supersede a biological kinship.
We're brothers by another mother.
Yes.
We love you, absolutely. Buddy.
Well, people, God bless you. Thank you guys for coming on. Thank you, Lizzie. Thank you, Blood River Radio family. We'll see you same time, same place next week. Good night, everybody.